Grammy time again, and Tom Moon from National Public Radio is here to help us make sense of all this. And Tom, it's good to see you, first of all. But it's interesting that last time you were here, it was the critics, your critics' look at the at last year musically. Yeah. And here we are looking at the Grammys and kind of trying to figure out what's going to do what. Two very different tasks.
Yes, it really is. And it becomes more divergent, it seems like, every year because, I mean, pity the poor people who have to nominate these artists for these Grammy Awards. They have to sift through stuff that's incredibly popular and at the top range of celebrity overexposure, and then they have to sift through great art and things that the critics have said are really important records, and to try to find a way to reflect what's really happened in the year in recording. And, of course, one barometer that they use a lot, which is actual sales, has been a plummeting thing this year. So, you know, suddenly the celebrity horse race aspect of it looks a little different because big-selling records aren't really big-selling anymore.
Now, the thing about the Grammys, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but what's the difference between the group of people that actually votes on the nominations and the ones that actually do the nominating?
The way I understand it is there are smaller committees that are set up by genre discipline so that people who are involved in, say, the jazz world come and present the entire Academy with their recommendations for jazz. Now, I don't know if their recommendations actually are binding or if there's a second stage in the review, but the initial batch of nominations are generated by specialists in each field. And then the actual awards are voted on by the Academy at large, which is this, you know, massive group of people who did everything from sing and play on records to write liner notes for records are voting members, and obviously producers are voting members.
Well, let's start at the most broad, which would, I guess, be the album of the year. What's nominated this year?
Well, it's the Dixie Chicks taking the long way, the debut of Gnarls Barkley, which is that great Danger Mouse and CeeLo project. That record was called Saint Elsewhere. John Mayer's Continuum, the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Stadium Arcadium, and the Justin Timberlake Megabucks project, Future Sex / Love Sounds.
Just looking at the outside, a number of these albums did pretty well with the critics as well.
Yeah. Certainly Gnarls Barkley got a lot of love for critics, more on the basis of that single, Crazy, which is nominated a few places and deserves to win every place it's nominated. It was probably the single of the year. It was my favorite single. And it really said something that nothing else did. It was a lot of fun, and it had a lot of energy that seemed like it alone possessed, and nothing else was close to it. Obviously, the Dixie Chicks sold some records. None of these, though, are the best-selling record of the year, which was the Disney High School Musical soundtrack.
That's right. And now, do you know why that's not nominated?
Who knows? I mean, maybe it was just too tween for Grammy land. I don't know.
Now, Justin Timberlake is somebody you might turn your nose up at, but many, many critics said this was an excellent album.
It was a really solid album. It was a lot of fun. It worked all the way through, and you could smell the money on every track. I mean, they put a lot of money into this record, and that, to me, is... I see this as an artifact of the sort of celebrity side of the industry where, you know, if you've got the money to hire Scott Storch and whoever else and Timbaland and all these great producers, and you can sort of buy the best tracks, then you're going to come away with a great record. This was a no-brainer good record. This was a very competent record that probably in a year when, deserved to sell more units than it did. But I don't think ultimately is a sort of world-class statement of art.
I'm bringing sexy back. Yeah. Them other boys don't know how to act. Yeah. I think it's special what's behind your back. Yeah. So turn around and I'll pick up the slack. Yeah. Dirty babe, you see these shackles, baby, I'm your slave. I'll let you whip me if I misbehave. It's just that no one makes me feel this way.
Well, should we play this game, what should win and what will win?
I think that record will win. I think Justin Timberlake's record will win. I actually think that John Mayer should win. John Mayer's Continuum is just an absolutely sparkling pop record. Everything about it, the production is beautiful, it's very clean, the guitars are great, there's a lot of spirit in the guitars, there's a lot of spirit in the tracks themselves. He doesn't have to work very hard as a vocalist. His idea of these songs comes through beautifully. I think he made a miscalculation with that single, Waiting on the World to Change. That was probably not the way to introduce this record, but I really think that in 10 or 15 years, when we look back on the pop music for this time, people will hold up that record and go, wow, this was really well done and not overdone.
Me and all my friends, we're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. We just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting.
Now let's move into one of the categories where you say Gnarls Barkley deserves to be nominated and maybe win. Record of the Year and Song of the Year. Let's do record first, and I guess we should once again explain the difference.
The record is awarded to the artist and the producer, and the Song of the Year award goes to the songwriter. And as we know, again, in that sort of celebrity side of the business, those are often two different people, and the songs are often written by a committee of people and, you know, sort of hired guns, and then handed to a producer. So the Record of the Year honor goes to the artist who made it and the producer.
And they are?
Okay, we got Mary J. Blige, Be Without You, which was produced by Byron Michael Cox and a bunch of other people. James Blunt's You're Beautiful. The Dixie Chicks' Not Ready to Make Nice. Gnarls Barkley, Crazy. And Corinne Bailey Rae's Put Your Records On.
Wow. You make a point there about the Mary J. Blige. A lot of R&B records are kind of done by committees now.
Yeah.
Is it track by track?
In this case, it was. And, you know, in Justin's case, the same thing. And that's sort of a pop record. But it's the idea that, you know, you're going to get one flavor from one guy, and you're hiring different people in different production houses to fill specific slots on your record. And, you know, again, if you have the money, it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's sort of the conventional prevailing wisdom of the business now says, you know, sure, use 20 people.
Now, this award, as opposed to a song, really has to take into account everything that's going on the track. And I look at the James Blunt track, and it's very simple. There's nothing going on there. We can't deny the song, but we can say it's not necessarily a great production. Now, the Gnarls Barkley, boy, I can see why this might win.
As a vocal performance, this is like the best CeeLo experience you could have in 3 minutes. I mean, he's so much having fun. It's so loose. It takes you into a place where, you know, the radio used to sound like this all the time. And pop radio had these character kind of people that would come out of nowhere with these songs. And this should not be such an exception, but it really is. And production-wise, what Danger Mouse does is he leaves a lot of room between where the track is and where the voice is. So if you're listening on a lousy, you know, car radio with one speaker out, you're still getting the CeeLo assault. And I think it was very carefully done that way. And, you know, as a production, then you listen to it on great speakers in a great environment, and you realize how thick it is and how thoughtful it is. And really, Danger Mouse puts a lot of these sort of more professional people, the people that worked on the Justin and the Mary J. record, all great. He sort of puts some distance between himself and those guys.
So I guess we can assume he's your should win?
I think they should win, and I really think in that time they will win.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Does that make me crazy?
Okay, that's Record of the Year. Now, Song of the Year is for the songwriting itself, and what's nominated
right.
for that?
Well, it's a lot of the same ones. It's You're Beautiful by James Blunt, Corinne Bailey Rae's Put Your Records On, the Dixie Chicks' Not Ready to Make Nice, a song called Jesus Take the Wheel, which is sung by Carrie Underwood and has a bunch of different songwriters, and then the Mary J. Blige, Be Without You.
Boy, it's all the same ones.
It's almost a mirror image. You know, now here's where, James Blunt had 5 nominations in his first time out. That's pretty extraordinary. If he deserved any of them, he deserved this one, because as a song, it is a great song. Very simple, nothing contrived about it. It's a song, you know, you can hear Joe Cocker singing it in 1975.
My life is brilliant. My love is pure. I saw an angel. Of that I'm sure. She smiled at me on the subway. She was with another man. But I won't lose no sleep on that, 'cause I've got a plan. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful, it's true. I saw your face in a crowded place, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'll never be with you.
Now, here's a category we always love, and it usually relates pretty well to things we hear on the World Cafe, sometimes years later, is the new artist category. And there have been some mistakes in the past, kind of what I'm referring to. But who's nominated this year?
All right. It's our man, James Blunt, who, if he has a sweep, it'll be, you know, we'll all be shaking our heads in a year when he comes with the next record. And we're like, how come we love that guy? Chris Brown, who's a young R&B / hip hop vocalist. Imogen Heap, who's, I think, on her second or third record. Could it be?
And then there's Fru Fru. So.
Yeah, right. Corinne Bailey Rae, the British UK sort of R&B diva light, and Carrie Underwood, the country singer.
What do you like?
Well, I think they're all fine. I think that if this is the whole field, and I don't have anyone in mind that didn't get picked, this is a slight field. And, James Blunt deserves recognition for that song, but the record as a whole wore very badly and doesn't hold up. I think that, you know, if you're going to judge a new artist on the basis of one song, maybe he wins. If you're going to really look at a record, not so much. Likewise, Corinne Bailey Rae, tons of press, got lots of love in this country, was heard a lot on the radio, was heard in all kinds of different radio settings, and she's totally pleasant as a singer, and the songs are sort of blank. And this is one of those things where she figured out how to sort of emulate the neo-soul people in a lighter, less sort of loaded context. I mean, she's not going to emote the way Mary J. Blige emotes. She's not going to make you believe what she's saying the way Mary J. Blige does. It's all very pleasant and neutral and, sort of falls under the heading of lifestyle music for me. That idea, you know, she's sort of an heir to Sade, not Jill Scott.
Okay, so she's not getting your vote. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I fear that James Blunt will win. And I think Carrie Underwood made a great record, a very solid, unflashy, very grounded kind of record. And if I have to pick from this field, she's my pick. But I think James Blunt wins this.
She was driving last Friday on her way to Cincinnati on a snow-white Christmas Eve. Going home to see her mama and her daddy with the baby in the back seat. 50 miles to go and she was running low on faith and gasoline. It'd been a long, hard year. She had a lot on her mind and she didn't pay attention. She was going away too fast. And before she knew it, she was spinning on a thin black sheet of glass. She saw both her lives flash before her eyes. She didn't even have time to cry. She was so scared. She threw her hands up in the air.
Another category we don't always talk about. Actually, we often pick one of the smaller categories to go into. But this one is one we haven't really delved into in the past, and that's the producers category. And certainly in terms of those big records, the celebrity records you talk about, producers are really, really important. And essentially, they're in terms of it's kind of like the auteur theory of film. They make the records, and the vocalists are on top of them. Do we have a number of those kinds of producers this year?
Yeah. Well, I'll read the nominations, and then we'll talk about those overlooked, or at least one. Howard Benson, he's a rock producer. He did Hoobastank, Less Than Jake, Papa Roach, and three or four other records during the course of the year. He was very busy, and his productions in the past have been great. T-Bone Burnett's in the category for his work on the Cassandra Wilson Thunderbird record, as well as his own True False Identity and the soundtrack to Walk the Line, which was, by the way, a very well-done soundtrack. Danger Mouse, there for mostly Saint Elsewhere, Gnarls Barkley, but also he was involved in a record called Pieces of the People We Love by a group called The Rapture. Rick Rubin, the veteran producer, there for the last installment of the Johnny Cash American series, as well as Stadium Arcadium, Taking the Long Way by the Dixie Chicks, and Neil Diamond's comeback 12 songs. And then will.i.am of the Black Eyed Peas, whose fingerprints are on a Mary J. Blige cut called About You, the Fergie record, Justin Timberlake, Santana, Busta Rhymes, and a couple of much of the Sergio Mendez comeback record.
Boy, he kind of represents a whole category there in and of himself. I know, but I'm thinking of other producers who may even work on the same records with him, Timbaland and other people.
Well, this is the baffling thing. Where's Timbaland? He produced a chunk of stuff on that Nelly Furtado record, which got a lot of love from some critics. I didn't think it was all that great, but he also worked on the Justin Timberlake record, and he's sort of... His production style is emulated by all these guys, most overtly will.i.am, who's like essentially a little Timbaland wannabe.
Mm-hmm. So he's not getting your vote either. Who do you like here?
I really like Danger Mouse. I think that if you put on all these records back to back and got to Gnarls Barkley, you would immediately sense something else is in the air. This is a real collaboration. This is a producer and an artist that are working together in a way to figure out some sort of a sound print that's unlike anything else out there. And, you know, that is, by the way, what Timbaland does, too. And that's, in a sense, the function of a good producer in pop and R&B. I think Danger Mouse just took it to another place. And I know that even though the rest of the songs on the Gnarls Barkley aren't that great, everybody in the music business listened to that record and studied it for its production.
So it seems like if there's going to be any battle of the sweeps here, it's kind of between the Gnarls Barkley camp and the James Blunt camp.
Well, Mary J. has a bunch of nominations, and this could actually be a Mary J. year, just, you know, lots of Mary J. love. And, you know, she's been in the trench for a long time. She works really hard. She's an incredible performer live. And while we're celebrating the recorded arts here, one of the things that I think is important anymore is that a lot of these people that are making records, that are just starting out making records, never have to do it live. I mean, you know, given the choice to spend 3 hours watching Mary J. or 3 hours watching Corinne Bailey Ray, it's an easy choice, and it's because Mary J. Blige has done it year after year after year. She knows how to, you know, sort of change the air in a room and make people feel what it is she's feeling. And that's, I think that's a part of the record making process that a lot of young artists are not getting to till their third or fourth record, if they get that far.
Chemistry was crazy from the get-go. Neither one of us knew why. We didn't build nothing overnight, cause a love like this takes some time. People swore it off as a phase, said we can't see that. Now from top to bottom, they see that we did that. Yes, it's so true that yes, we creeping through it. Yeah, but we got rush. Yeah, see, baby, we've been too strong for too long.
And I can't be without you, baby.
And I'll be waiting up until you get home.
Cause I can't sleep without you, baby. Oh. Anybody who's ever loved you knows just what it feels. Too hard to fake it. Nothing can replace it.
Call the radio.
If you just can't be without you, baby.
Well, I may be speaking for you, Tom Moon, and the Grammys is a must-see night of television for me, but we do know that it doesn't ever do that well in the ratings. Music sales are down. The malaise is upon us. Are they destined for a cable channel at some point in the future? Or?
Wow. That is, you could be onto something there, and it's very scary to think that the problems that the business has and the sort of schizophrenia that we're talking about between what is really the art that we want to celebrate and what the business says we must acknowledge gets to be such a gulf that it becomes something that can't exist on one show in primetime network television. I mean, I would hope that the fact that the Grammy nominators are still looking out for some of the great artists and just not caring about the horse race of sales, you know, I hope that indicates that they don't want to lose the idea that they're out to acknowledge greatness here. But then, you know, you look at some of the people who were overlooked this year and you wonder, I mean, you know, where's the Bob Dylan made a great record, critics loved it, and it's really not evident in the large categories. I mean, that should be considered one of the albums of the year.
I believe it's in folk music. There you go. Well, we will be watching, and thanks for making sense of it for us.
I don't know if I did that.
Tom Moon from National Public Radio on the Grammys here on the World Cafe. On our World Cafe Grammy Awards show, let's continue with that contemporary folk Americana category that contains Bob Dylan and Jackson Browne, plus three other albums that got a fair amount of attention here at the World Cafe. In a bit, we'll play excerpts of interviews with Roseanne Cash and Guy Clark. But first up, it's Emmylou Harris and Mark Knopfler, who were nominated for their work together on the album All the Road Running. You know, one of the first songs we had from this was All the Road Running, which was on, Mark, your best of. That came out before the holidays. And that kind of gave the feeling, and I've read about this, that there is a vibe of being a song about what it's like to be on the road, which isn't entirely a universal experience, but the idea of being a working man, I guess is. Did that emerge as a theme, or is that just because of that song?
Well, there was that song, but I think there was another one too, wasn't there, Emmy? There was Rolling On as well. I mean,
Beyond My Wildest Dreams,
yeah,
too.
Just
kind
general.
Of being away and wanting to come home, and that separation from family. And you know, Mark and I, we've been working musicians all our lives, and so it is a common experience that we share. But I think that the songs that Mark has written are transcendent, you know, that people can relate to it because it does deal with that longing for being someplace other than where you are. We've all experienced that.
Absolutely. And this is All the Road Running. You'll get a live performance of that from our guests, Mark Knopfler and Emmylou Harris.
1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3 A 1,000,000 miles our vagabond wheels clocked up beneath the clouds. They're counting down to showtime when we do it for real with the crowds. Air miles are owing, but they don't come for free, and they don't give you any. If it's all for nothing, all the road of running has been in vain.
The rim shots come down like cannon fire and thunder off the wall. There's a man in every all. This is my pipe, this is my drum, so you never will hear me complain. And if it's all for nothing, all the road running's been in vain. All the road running, all the road running.
Well, now if you're inclined to go up on a wall, it can only be fast and high. And those who don't like the danger soon find something different to try. And when there is only a ring in your ears and an echo down memory lane, then if it's all for nothing, all the road of running been in vain.
All the road of running, all the road of running, all the road of running, all the road of running. The show's packing up, sit and watch the carnival leaving town. And there's no pretending I'm not a fool for riding around and around. Like the pictures you keep of that old Walt dance you showed me one time on play. But if it's in vain.
Well, a million miles of vagabond sky clocked up above the clouds, but I'm still your man for the Roman, for as long as there's a Roman allowed.
Tell me a rider, tell me a walk, for as long as the dreamer remains. And if it's all for nothing, all the road running's been in vain.
One of my faves, and the title track of Mark and Emmy's new album. We're talking with Mark Knopfler and Emmy Lou Harris today on the Cafe. You know, it's funny. A lot of the material I read about this talk about the gruff-voiced Mark Knopfler. But correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. You sing above Emmy on a couple of these, right?
Well, yeah. since I gave up cigarettes, that was a long time ago, you know, when I gave up. It must be about 10 years ago now. Things have been improving somewhat. There's been some small improvement. I suppose I'd be, anybody would be nervous singing with Emmy Lou. But the thing about when Emmy sings, it's honest. And when I sing, I just try to be true to the song. And that's what Emmy tries to do too. The song is really the boss. And you just try and do the best thing by it. And as long as you're honest about what you're doing, you know, I think I was very fortunate in the sense that you know, my voice and Emmy's creates what she calls a third voice, which is right. I mean, so something else happens. And sometimes Emmy's got the lead and sometimes it's the other way. And nobody really knows what's going to happen next. And that's part of the interest of the record. It's like we don't have a house harmony.
Yeah, it's nothing stock. The voicings can change and the voices still sound good together. So, I mean, that's always a plus.
But the house special is still the best. I think it's when you, you know, Emmy, you
the
know.
The blue plate special.
Like, yeah, you know, when you've got the lead, I like that the best.
Now, what about the writing for this? Did you think in terms of writing a duet on everything, or were some of these songs, for instance, Emmy, you wrote The Bell Star, which I can see working out as being written as a duet.
Well, that was written just as a song. I mean, I just fell out one day and never really thought about it as a duet or what I was going to do with it. But Mark was generous enough and insisted that I bring some songs to the project if I had anything that I thought would work, and I had that song and Love and Happiness, and the song was so much better having it be a courting song, becoming a courting song, as Mark calls it, but a conversation between a man and a woman, and it becomes two characters who have been around the block a little bit and are saying, well, you know, let's take a chance.
Not like me at all.
Not like you at all, I know. All the rumors are just all wrong. We've got a few years on us, you know, and a little experience, and so the song, I think, has a nice, gentle, courting kind of quality to it, realistic for who we are at this point in our lives. And Mark added that wonderful sort of whoa thing that's happens.
I'll do that.
That I just love. You know, that's like my
so
favorite
wonderful.
Part of the song.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah. It was just like you're going on a roller coaster and you just...
Yeah, that's the brainy bit. Whoa.
He's such a great lyricist. There's that whoa that wasn't there before.
Well, let's play a bit of Bell Star from the album, from All the Road Running. Mark Knopfler and Emmy Lou Harris.
My mama and my daddy told me love is a two-way street. But lately, baby, you've been finding new ways of dragging your feet. So come on, make your best shot. You don't have to take the blame. I'll be a Bell Star, you can be my Jesse James.
There's lonely people everywhere, from Abilene to Arkansas. The way they run for cover, you'd think love was against the law. Well, I don't need a pistol, baby, you don't have to rob a train. You can be my Bell Star and I can be your Jesse James.
Emmy Lou Harris and Mark Knopfler with one of Emmy's songs, Bell Star, from their album All the Road Running. Still to come this hour, there are two more artists nominated, along with Mark and Emmy Lou, in the contemporary folk category, Guy Clark. And next up, Roseanne Cash. We get back here to the World Cafe. If you're a big music fan, Sunday night, February 11th at 8 p.m., you'll have your TV on CBS for the 49th Annual Grammy Awards telecast. We're looking in depth at the contemporary folk category, one that doesn't always make it onto the broadcast, and listening to a few of the artists nominated in that category who have been guests on the Cafe this year. Roseanne Cash released one of her best albums ever with Black Cadillac, an album that was her reaction to the death of not only her famous father, Johnny Cash, but her stepmother, June Carter Cash, and also her mother, Vivian Liberto, all in the same time period.
I was thinking about what you do. You're a songwriter. And here you go through this simple and very profound thing that you've gone through. It's simple because we all go through
right.
it, but it's profundity just keeps speaking. And your art form is popular song, which is such a proscribed form. You got to have a certain number of verses. You got to have a hooky chorus. You got to, and you're interested in that aspect of your art too. You want this to get out there. Did you feel limited by the form at any point?
No, I didn't. In fact, the form itself brought me a tremendous amount of solace, because when something feels unmanageable and overwhelming, that amount of emotional content in your life, and I'm a songwriter and I have a structure that I could bring to that, a sense of poetry, sense of discipline, focus, a rhyme scheme, you know, a verse, a chorus,
mm-hmm.
that was so useful to me. It made things feel manageable. And a lot of times in the midst of the confusion and grief, I would start writing and something would be revealed or something would come clear. Something would kind of click into place. Some days, you know, I had a lot of faith and some days I had no faith. And to write it all out was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
To give each one of them equal weight. Not go, okay, well, let me just get through this dark period and so I can get to the light stuff. No, but to give the dark stuff equal weight because it's just as human.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to play Black Cadillac here, or at least you hear it, because here you do a live version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in terms of song form and all that, this one stands out in a lot of ways, and it was as you've expressed, you wrote this way early in the
right?
Yeah.
The lyrically, it's a little bitter, you know. I mean, I was anticipating the public takeover of grief about my dad, my stepmother, and that was I was really dreading that. You know, I felt like I had to share my father my whole life. I didn't want to share him in death. So there's a little bitterness in the songs. They're not all this bitter, but when I recorded it with Bill Bottrell, as it started unfolding, the arrangement and the approach to the song, I started thinking about The Doors' Riders on the Storm,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of eerie, you know, ambient thing. So we brought a bit of that to it with more aggression.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
that's an interesting way to put it. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, of course, none of that's on this. This is the acoustic,
yeah, this is different.
Acoustic version of it, of Black Cadillac.
It was a black Cadillac that drove you away. Everybody's talking, but they don't have much to say. Was a black sky and rain, none of it fell. One of us gets to go to heaven, one has to stay in hell. Now it's a lonely world, I guess it always was. Minus you, minus blood, my blood. It was a black Cadillac, like one you used to drive. You were always rolling, but those wheels burn up your life. Oh, it's a black heart of pain that I'm wearing. It suits me just fine. There was nothing I could do for you when you were still alive. Yeah, it's a lonely world, just a numbers game. A 100 years will find me feeling just the same. Yeah, it's a lonely world, I guess it always was. Minus you, minus blood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Black Cadillac, which is one, as Roseanne Cash stated, of the songs that ended up being produced by one of two people that worked on this album. John Leventhal worked with you on it, and so did Bill Bottrell. Bill Bottrell produced The World Unseen, mm-hmm. which just knocks me out. I just love this song. It's not one of the big shiny single type songs on here, but it's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. And how does that song? How did it fit in? How did it get written?
It's interesting that you dialed in on that song, because that song is really important to me. To me, it's the centerpiece of the record.
Mm.
And just personally, it's really important. It's kind of almost a manifesto for me.
Mm.
But it's so quiet that a lot of people miss it. That was also written shortly after my dad died. I started writing it, and I was thinking about finding the people you love in the artifacts they leave behind, and in their geography, and in their habits, in their strengths and weaknesses, and, you know, are they there? Just that searching. And I went to Christmas Eve services that year. He died in September. I took my kids to Christmas Eve services at the Episcopal Church in New York, and they sang that old song, old hymn, We Three Kings of Orient Are. And they got to that line, westward leading, still proceeding. And I felt like somebody hit me with a 2x4. I wrote it on the program, that line, and I went home and I just inserted it in the song. And it was so profound to me, the realization that, well, we're all headed in this direction. Some of us get there sooner than others, but, you know, death is not for the chosen few. We're all going there. And maybe there's a whole world beyond this one that we don't see, the world unseen.
I'm the sparrow on the roof. I'm the list of every one I have to lose. I'm the rainbow in the dirt. I am who I was and how much I can hurt.
The World Unseen from Roseanne Cash from her Black Cadillac album, nominated in the Best Contemporary Folk category, as is Guy Clark for his Workbench songs. We talked with the veteran Texas songwriter about making the album and why it's called Workbench Songs.
I'd built some guitars in Texas 35 years ago, a few classical guitars, and about 5 years ago, I had always planned to do it some more, to build some guitars, and carried all my wood and tools and stuff around with me for all those years. And I've always, you know, piddled with them, worked on them for friends, you know, and stuff like that. But I one day packed away my little 8-track studio and built a workbench and bought some wood and started building.
Now, the album's called Workbench Songs, which would kind of indicate that you turn around every so often and pick up a guitar in that space.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where the title came from, because I write and have my little shop in the same room. And I just always, it was always a dream to be able to work on guitars and write songs in the same room.
Right, right.
You know, it's just...
Well, it's a good bunch, but one of them has actually been out in one form. It was on the live album, out in the parking lot.
Right. I had always planned to redo that song, and because at the time I did it on the live album, I really didn't know it, and I wasn't comfortable with doing it, and I was under some kind of pressure from the record company to have a new song on this live album. You know, got to have some new songs. Well, I don't really, you know, I want to do all these. Well, you need a new song. Okay, so I did it. And I never was really pleased with the version, simply because I didn't know it, you know, and had always planned to go back and do it again.
Well, you feel like you know it now?
I'm learning it.
You all want to give it a try?
Sure, sure. Out in the parking lot.
Now, who hasn't been here? I mean, this is as much about going to see live music as, or just going to the bars, anything else. I mean, everybody's been here.
Oh, this song?
Yeah.
Well, it's, I was always thought of it as kind of the antithesis of the boot scootin' boogie. You know, it's like the real stuff is going on in the parking lot.
Well, amen to that.
Sitting on the fender of someone else's truck, drinking Old Crow whiskey, hot 7-Up out in the parking lot. You can hear the band playing right through the wall. There ain't no cover charge. Ain't no last call out in the parking lot. Now there's a couple of cowpokes putting up their dukes. There wasn't much to it after both of them puked out in the park. Someone called the police, and the police finally came, and they wrote them a couple of tickets, and they took a couple of names out in the parking lot. Well, I love to see the neon dancing on the gravel. I love to hear the pickup trucks come unravel. Some have given up, some have given in. Looks like everybody's looking for a friend out in the parking lot. Couple that could not wait to get home, mother, probably in love, so let's leave them alone out in the parking lot. Now the band is on the bus, they're all loaded up to leave, but the drummer's got a girlfriend and she's tugging at his sleeve out in the parking lot. I'd love to see the neon dancing on the gravel. I'd love to hear the pickup trucks come unravel. Some have given up, some have given in. Looks like everybody's looking for a friend out in the parking lot. Everybody's gone, and they have shot out all the lights, and the dust begins to settle, and it's never been so quiet out in the parking lot.
I Out in the Parking Lot, Guy Clark Playing Live. That is one that is on his Workbench Songs albums. It's nominated for a Best Contemporary Folk Album, along with Mark Knopfler and Emmylou Harris for All the Road Running, Roseanne Cash for Black Cadillac, Jackson Browne for Solo Acoustic Volume 1, and Bob Dylan for Modern Times, all nominated. Next hour, artist nominated in the Best New Artist category on our Grammy show here on the World Cafe, where support is provided by the members of the World Cafe affiliates nationwide, including WFUV in New York City and KSMF in Ashland, Oregon. Shows produced at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. My name's David Dye. This is the World Cafe. I'm David Dye. It's our Grammy Awards show, and we are looking at some of the artists nominated in the Best New Artist category, which has proved to be kind of a problem with the Grammys over the years, as they've nominated people who've recorded before. In fact, we have one of those coming up in Imogen Heap, who had a big hit with Frou Frou. But anyway, this guy is new this year. He's James Blunt. He's up for Best New Artist, also Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Pop Vocal Album, Best Pop Vocal Album, a lot of categories, and he should do well. As his success was building, we had James Blunt on the cafe, and I asked him about his time before he started singing when he was in the British Army in Kosovo.
I did just over four, almost 5 years in the Army because they paid for my tuition fees at school and university, so I owed them time. But yeah, and in Kosovo in 99.
But you got to do a bit of the ceremonial stuff before that.
That was the final job I did, actually.
Oh,
my
okay.
Last year. So I did the kind of the Green Army, hiding around in bushes. And then my last year, they said, where do you want to go? Where's your Top Gun? And I said, I'd like to go and prance around in fancy uniforms in London and look after the Queen.
I'm not going to ask you which is harder, because I know, what was your experience like as you got to Kosovo? Did you have had anybody prepared you for what was going on, or can anybody prepare somebody for something like that?
It's a strange question, I suppose. In many ways you are prepared. I spent a long time out in Canada on the prairie there, and we were playing effectively what was our version of World War III.
Right.
And I was a Russian for 6 months and learned Russian tactics, and the Brits came out and fought us. And so you're pretty trained as to how to deal with an opposing army in that way. But obviously on a humanitarian level, when it comes down to seeing people and the suffering that any kind of war brings, not really to armies. I think, those people, you expect them to suffer. But the civilians, the villagers, be they children or grandparents, girls and boys, I think nothing will necessarily prepare anyone for those kind of visions. Although I think like doctors and nurses, you become pretty numb to those things very quickly.
What shape was your music in when you went over there? Had you been doing any writing?
Although I was doing time in the army, that really was just it was a job for me. And I've been doing music all my life, from learning the violin when I was 5, the piano when I was 7, and then took up the guitar when I was 14. And really at that age, being exposed to other popular music at that time from the kids at school and starting to have musical ideas, I realized that this is what I wanted to be. I was going to be a musician and declared that from a very early age. Had to do my time. But I was writing these songs. I'd call them ideas rather than songs at
right.
that stage. And it's only really when I then came up to London and met a few other musicians that with a helping hand and a few pointers, understood the notion of songcraft and how to turn ideas into whole, rounded, proper songs.
And so a lot of these were written post that experience when you were back in London?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in my last year of that job, and then the year after leaving, that was when this album, Back to Bedlam, was completed.
Well, I want to find out more about how it all came to pass, hooking up with Linda Perry, et cetera. But let's hear some tunes to begin with. What do you want to start with?
Sure. Let's start off with You're Beautiful.
My life is brilliant. Life is brilliant, my love is pure. I saw an angel, of that I'm sure. She smiled at me on the subway. She was with another man, but I won't lose no sleep on that, 'cause I've got a plan. You're beautiful,
You're beautiful. You're beautiful, it's true. I saw your face in a crowded place, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'll never be with you. Yes, she caught my eye as we walked on by. She could see from my face that I was flying high. And I don't think that I'll see her again, but we shared a moment that will last till the end. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful, it's true. I saw your face in a crowded place, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'll never be with you. You're beautiful, you're beautiful, it's true. There must be an angel with a smile on her face when she thought up that I should be with you. But it's time to face the truth. I will never be with you.
James Blunt is our guest today on The Cafe, and that's a hey, that's a pickup song that nobody ever heard, or at least the person in the song didn't.
No.
Oh, you're beautiful. Great song.
Yeah, well, thanks very much. Yeah, it's a, you know, relatively miserable song, isn't it? But, someone played that at their wedding recently, and also we played that in a show, and it was the final song, and I could see someone in the box above me get down on one knee, and I thought they were having some argument to begin with. She was just shouting, "What?" She was saying something, "Will you marry me?" And, strange song, which finishes, you know, "I will never be with you."
Right, exactly. But
use it to propose anyway.
The chorus is so strong. It's I don't know if you wanted to switch to piano now, but I'd love it if you could do No Bravery, because that's the one song that you actually ended up writing in Kosovo.
Yeah, that's right. Let me do that.
Okay. What's the story behind this one?
I wrote this in about 10 minutes out in Kosovo in 99, and... you know, we didn't. They often sort of write up in the bio that I wrote it in my barracks. You know, in the comfort of a defended area, which at night as well, it's a bizarre concept because, of course, there was no barracks, and the notion of a defended area, well, that's just whoever you've got on guard at a particular time. So no, I wrote it during the day, just when we had a time off, beside a tank. And it really, you know, the ingredients for this kind of song are just in front of you. It's just describing exactly what I saw, and you know, and rather than try and describe it in all its detail, the song really speaks for itself.
There are children standing here, arms outstretched into the sky, tears drying on their face. He has been here. Brothers lie in shallow graves, fathers lost without a trace, a nation blind to their disgrace since he's been here. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, only sadness. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, only sadness. your sadness. Houses burnt beyond repair. The smell of death is in the air. A woman weeping in despair says he has been here. Tracer lighting up the sky. It's another family's turn to die. A child afraid to even cry out says he has been here. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, only sadness. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, only sadness. Only sadness. There are children standing here, arms outstretched into the sky, but no one asks them question why he has been here. All men kneel to accept their fate, wives and daughters cut and raped. A generation drenched in hate says he has been here. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, only sadness. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, only sadness. Only sadness.
No Bravery, song is our guest. James Blunt says really doesn't need a whole lot of explanation besides what you hear, and that's on his album Back to Bedlam, a song written in Kosovo. And it's funny, the part that gets me when you tell that story is, wait a minute, here you are out in the field and you have a guitar with you?
Yeah, sure. Well, and the main thing is that you know that when you're going to go out to those environments for 6 months of your life, sometimes you're going to be incredibly busy and using whatever equipment you've got around you. But at other times, there's going to be lots of hanging around and boredom. Everyone in any kind of army always talks about that throughout the wars, the hanging around moments. And some people take a football,
right.
And others take a pack of cards. And for me, a guitar seemed to be the natural thing. And fortunately, a tank is a relatively large storage space, so I could stick it on the back.
It survived. It didn't, no cracks.
It survived that environment. I did actually come home and I was recording some demos in a recording studio. I walked out of the recording studio and everyone came to watch me leave because I was leaving on a rather oversized motorbike. And for a moment, it looked rather cool as I got on the motorbike with the guitar over my back. And then at about 2 miles an hour, I lost balance. I fell over, I smashed the mirror, the indicator of the motorbike, and I smashed the guitar as well. And then I couldn't pick up the motorbike, so they had to help me.
I hope they took a picture before all that happened.
Fortunately, that won't be seen, but it was...
James Blunt, nominated for Best New Artist this year, along with Corinne Bailey Ray. She talked with Michaela Majoun. She's also up in Best New Artist category and Record of the Year and Song of the Year. Here's her song, Like a Star.
Just like a star across the sky, just like an angel off the page, you have appeared to my life. Feel like I've never been the same. Just like a song in my heart, just like oil on my hands. I wonder why it is I don't argue like this with anyone but you. We do it all the time, blowing out my mind. You got this look I can't. You make me feel I'm alive when and everything else is open. Without a doubt, you're on my side. Heaven has been way too long. Can't find the words to write this song of your love. Still, I'm wondering why it is I don't argue like this with anyone but you. We do it all the time, blowing. We've been through that before. From tonight, I know that you're the only one. I've been confused and in the dark. Now I understand. Yeah, yeah. Like a star across my sky, just like an angel off the page, you have appeared to my life. Feel like I'll never be the same. Just like a song in my heart, just like oil.
Thank you.
Corinne Bailey Ray with her band at World Cafe Live in Philadelphia, and our guest today here on the World Cafe. Now, you started out playing violin.
Yeah, that was the first instrument I played, and it's the only one I'm sort of classically trained on as well. So I think when I was younger, I did love singing, but I never really felt myself to be a singer. You know, I had a kind of croaky voice and a sort of lower voice than a lot of people in my school, in my class. And so I never really fit in well in the choir, and I didn't like what they used to choose to sing as well. It was all like Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals and things where I just felt that my voice kind of stuck out a bit like a sore thumb. But on the other side of it, I really felt like I took to the violin, and I started to play quite early, and I got to play in orchestras and lead orchestras. So when I was young, most of my musical energy went into playing the violin, and I think a lot of people thought that's what I would just always do. So it was a big decision at kind of 15 to say, actually, you know, I think my violin playing days are over and I really want to start playing the guitar. And I invited my violin teacher to come and watch my band, and she was saying, yeah, I think you should do this. You know, she was excited about the fact that it was a creative thing. A lot of classical musicians are amazing at interpreting works, but a lot of people can't kind of make up stuff. And my teacher was excited that I was actually making up this music, and she encouraged me to do it as well. So I didn't feel like I'd let her down too much when I sort of packed my violin away and started playing guitar.
Corinne Bailey Ray is our guest today on the World Cafe, and you seem to have really a vast interest in all kinds of music and a lot of knowledge. And do you feel like all those different things show up in what you're writing? and playing now?
I hope that everything that I've learned at some point will show up in at some point in what I do. I'm kind of aware that this album is mostly in this kind of soul area, although I feel like it still has like that aspect of being a singer-songwriter album. You know, I spent a long time with the songs. I wanted the songs to mean something and not just be kind of grooves. You know, I wanted them to have structures and be chords and things. But yeah, hopefully, eventually, you know, everything that has gone in will come out at some point. You know, I think music's so great and it's so diverse, and I love it too much to kind of just focus on one style for particularly long. But I think hopefully the thing that would pull it all together is the fact that it's you and your own style and your own voice.
So you want to put your records on, girl.
Yeah.
We should talk about that song because that's the first single here.
Yeah,
right?
It's the first single everywhere, actually. I really like that song, and it was the last song I wrote for the album. I did a big gig in February, two Februaries ago, I guess, that I invited a lot of record companies to. And at the end of it, I thought, I really loved that gig, but it's just missing one more sort of upbeat song. I think naturally I just gravitate towards slow, kind of sad things. And all the music I love is these slow, sad kind of ballads. But I think if you go and watch a whole set like that, sometimes it's a bit much. So I wanted to put in kind of an upbeat song, and I wanted to write a song about not being afraid to be different and about finding your identity in music, which is something I felt like I did when I was a teenager, you know, discover a band that you're like, wow, I love this band, or I love this singer, you know, hearing Bjork for the first time and thinking, wow, it's so interesting, it's so kooky, but it's so soulful, but it's, you know, it's a little bit sad as well, and just finding this singer that I thought, oh, I love this singer. Or, so Put Your Records On is about finding that music you can just embrace as your own. And I think that becomes then part of your identity and makes you more confident about your own kind of individuality.
Three little birds sat on my window, and they told me I don't need to worry. Summer came like cinnamon, so sweet. Little girls all Dutch on the concrete. Yeah. Maybe sometimes we'll got it wrong, but it's alright. What can seem to change? What can stay the same? Ooh, don't you hesitate. Go. Seem to change.
Put your records on from our guest, Corinne Bailey Ray. You have a few songs, like Put Your Records On, I'd Like To, and Butterfly, that really paint pictures from your childhood in Leeds. And what was it like growing up there? Tell us about it.
I had a childhood which I really enjoyed and which I thought was great, but on paper it wouldn't have looked so good, you know. So we weren't really a wealthy family. We're sort of quite skint, and also, my parents split when I was a teenager, and they didn't really get on that well. So on paper, it looks like it was kind of sad, but I loved it, you know. And I think the fact that we weren't always kind of jetting off to South of France or going skiing or going to cinema or watching TV meant that there was all this spare time and a lot of the time to be creative, you know, to make up plays and to make up songs and to hang around in the garden and to make the most of summers kind of just wandering around our area. And I had a really good friend who lived like 2 minute walk from me, and she was really musical, and we used to play our violins together and make up little tapes. So I think of myself as having a really happy childhood. And I also think that I was a sort of cautious and serious kid as well. So I kind of try and look back on it and maybe like with a bit more of a playful heart than I did at the time as well, because I think I was always a bit of a worrier and I was kind of like bright and a little bit, kept a little bit to myself. So so it's a mixture. It's a mixture of feelings. I think maybe it's changed from the vantage point where you're looking back, kind of thing. But at the time, from where I am now, I see it as being a really happy time, and I like to write about where I've come from in the songs as well.
You sing in this album about wanting simple things and kind of disdaining money, but do you think that's going to change based on what's going on right now?
I don't think so, because I think I'm old, you know, I'm older, so it's not like I'm sort of 16, you know, I'm 27, and I think I've had a whole life of not really having that much money and not being bothered so much about things like that. So I still feel the same, you know, I still like simple things. I like being at home, I like watching TV, and I like, you know, seeing my family and eating at restaurants that aren't too fancy and all of that. And also, you know, I'd like to do something good with money if I ever got money. You know, I'd like to do something decent with it. I think there's a lot of people get money and they don't really help anybody out, and I think it'd be good to sing good if you got money.
Corinne Bailey Ray, she is up for Best New Artist, as is Imogen Heap. As we mentioned, she's one of those artists who has a past. In fact, she has a solo album and her work with Frou Frou behind her, but she was nominated this year for her current album. And she came by to do, this song, which is a kind of her vocal exercise on the tune called Hide and Seek. And we get the story of where that song came from.
I had like an idea that I... of this hide and seek thing that I like the childhood reference, and I wanted to write a song about that. And so when I was kind of stream of consciousness singing along to myself playing the piano keyboard thing, this whole song, all 4.5 minutes of it, just arrived from start to finish in that 4.5 minutes. And but all the lyrics weren't there because lyrics are like pulling teeth with me. And right at the end, you can actually hear the local train going by the window, because my studio is right next to a train, busy train line, and ended up kind of inviting the train noises into my record at the end, because there were so many of them. And then actually on one of the songs, Loose Ends, is actually a train solo. So on the end of Hide and Seek, you can kind of hear this kind of in the background, and it kind of goes through the vocoder, and it was perfect timing, so I used that in the actual final one. And then I went home and I played it to my boyfriend, who's kind of tattoos and bleached blonde hair and 6'4", and he started crying when he heard it. So I was like, maybe something in this song.
What's going on here? Well, we'll see if people cry today in our audience.
Okay, so this is Hide and Seek.
Where are we? What the hell is going on? Stars only begun to fall, crop circles in the carpet, sinking feeling.
and rub my eyes. This can't be happening when busy streets immense with people would stop to hold their heavy. Trains and sewing machines, horses, they were here first. Oily marks appear on walls where pleasure moments hung before the takeover. The sweeping insensitivity of this still catch me around here, blood and tears, they were here for what you say, oh, that you only meant well, well, of course you did, what you say, oh, that it's all for the best, because it is what you said. Oh, that it's just what we need, and you decided this, what you say. Oh, what did she say? Ransom notes keep falling out your mouth, mid-sweet talk. Newspaper accounts. You speak no feeling, no, I don't believe you. You don't care a bit, you don't care a bit. How did I
Imogen Heap with Hide and Seek live on the World Cafe. She's nominated along with Corinne Bailey Ray, James Blunt, Chris Brown, and Carrie Underwood in the coveted Best New Artist category. Coming up, music from Elvis Costello. He's up in the pop vocal category along with Alan Toussaint. We get back here to the World Cafe.